Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning. It's just a couple minutes after 11 o'clock Saturday morning, hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Samira Umeb and Dr. Jerry Mixon. In the studio and room for your questions, phone lines are open for you at 206-644-6006. Time for you to call right now, not at the end of the show. We don't want to have to rush you out. We want to answer your questions. All right, we're headed to Preston now. And Ray has a question for the doctors. Good morning, Ray.
Hey, hello, Ray.
Good morning, everyone. You know, you like Dr. Maiden, right? And does he work at the Evergreen Hospital?
Yes.
Yes, he does.
Well, I went there yesterday, and I saw my doctor, and he wants to put me on the generic Crestor, and he told me that there's no, absolutely no problems with that drug at all. And here I'm hearing from you that it's quite the opposite. I've been taking a lot of red yeast rice, and it has lowered my cholesterol some, but apparently my latest blood test came back with the, we did the segregated ones where they look at the LDL, the little hard ones and the little fluffy ones.
Yep. Good.
Yep.
I don't
fractionated.
Know what LPL, A and B or something.
And
I have a lot of the little hard ones that they're concerned about. He says those can get into the cells. And they did an angiogram on me a couple years ago.
Okay.
And I don't know the name of the vessel, but it's called the Widowmaker.
Yeah, LAD, left anterior descending.
Yeah, left anterior descending is the one that kills people.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he says 30% been 30% clogged. Okay. But it's nothing to worry about unless it gets more. So I was taking the generic PE5 one that you recommend, 5 milligrams a day.
Uh-huh.
But, man, it gave me such indigestion. If I take that half a tablet twice a day, would that maybe help out instead of having to take tamsulosin?
It's got a long half-life. And so this it'll build up over time. But, you know, take as much as you comfortably can. Yeah. So start at 2.5 milligrams a day. See how you do.
Yeah. And you can build up.
I was thinking twice a day.
Well, you can
take 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah, but my point is,
it's
a long enough half-life, you're not going to have it drop much by that evening. Okay. The tadalafil works for 36 hours. All right. So if you take it and 10 hours later you take another dose, you're still boosting your blood levels pretty high. Try taking it with food. Take it during a meal. Eat half your meal, chew your pill, and take it with the other half meal and see what happens.
Okay. And if there's ever a chance that you could name those studies or that I can look them up and show them to my doctor, it'd be great.
Sure. Which studies?
You know, the ones you mentioned today.
About which? About statins?
We've mentioned studies about a whole lot of different things.
I'm sorry. The ones on the statins.
The testosterone and so on?
27%.
Sure. Yeah. In fact, is during the next commercial break, I'll pull it up. I've got it in my database, saved in my file. So, yeah, it's, I keep it in my doctor teaching file. Sorry, because I want all the
it's
doctors
to read. It's a big file.
So a good way would be if you want that information, if you send an email to our customer service, then Dr. Mixon's email can be sent to customer service, and they'll send it out to you, okay?
Yeah, we'll actually send you copies of the paper.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Or
you get it on the air. Okay, we can do that too. You brought up many important topics, and one of them was the particle sizes and what does cholesterol mean and is it dangerous? Clearly, with the smaller particle sizes of LDL, you do have heart disease. And, you know, with 30% blockage, I think, you know, I'm not going to contradict any cardiologist, but I was having a conversation with a radiologist yesterday who does CT angiograms. And her theory was that, you know, any lesion less than 50% is probably not dangerous. We do the calcium score first, as you know. And in the calcium score, we're looking at calcified plaque, which is stable plaque. But we send patients for CT angiograms, and we usually have the cardiologist do that when we're looking for soft plaque. So that's what they're looking at. They're looking to see whether you have any soft plaque, which, as you know, is the more dangerous plaque. And that's why when we do our cardiac inflammatory study, we're looking for inflammation markers, two particular ones that are myeloperoxidase and PLA2, which tells us whether that thrombus is about to rupture or not. And it also picks up the oxidized LDL. A little behind the game for you, because you already know that you have 30% blockage of the LAD. And so the question for you is, what can you do? And yes, I completely agree, the lifestyle modifications, the whole food, plant-based diet. Some may talk about chelation. I don't know enough about it, so I won't go there. I usually do recommend the cardiology opinion. The best thing will be to reduce your personal risk factors and whatever you can do to help with that, obviously. Right. With the statins, I do have patients that are on statins, but then we're monitoring. We're doing their nutritional analysis. We're doing their risk profile so that we're reducing as much of the risk factor for body aches and pains. We use CoQ10 for that. We use vitamins and supplements. We do a lot of sugar monitoring, hemoglobin A1C, so that we prevent and protect them from becoming diabetic. They know that that sugar level will rise over the next few years. So there's a risk stratification and protection going on.
Okay. Have either of you doctors heard about Dr. Esselton? He was a cardiologist.
Yes, of course. Absolutely.
Sure.
And he's got a plant-based diet where there's no oil.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I've seen, there's a documentary on the KTCS that all these people who went on this just had amazing results, not just with the cardiac mm-hmm. stuff and blood pressure, but like all kinds of other ailments. What are your yes. thoughts on that kind of a diet where you just completely stay away from oil and
it's a very tough diet to stay on.
Yeah.
Well, I know.
You almost need a religious fervor to stick with that diet more than a few months. But it does work. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the first person who did that, what was his name? Dean Ornish. Yeah, Dean Ornish down in Texas was a cardiologist who was the first one to come up with that diet. And his website, even back 20 years ago, was showing that 18 months on that diet, he was opening up arteries that were 90% occluded and taking them down to 50% in 18 months.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was a dramatic opening. And I went on that diet once upon a time. Mm. It's really tough to stick to.
Yes, it is.
But two things. A, you will get skinny. You'll lose weight like mad without the calories from the fat.
Yep.
So it makes you really skinny. You don't get hungry. That's the good news. But you do get cravings because we're designed to eat fat.
I have a patient who did that, and when I saw his labs 3 months later, I couldn't believe the change. So I was convinced somebody put him on a statin, and he came in and decided his wife put him on the Ornish diet.
Yeah. The Ornish diet will drop your cholesterols like a stone. Your weight will come down gangbusters, and you will open up your arteries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, that Ornish diet is just tough.
Right.
And in fact, if the one – version of it that I like best is actually his first one. The book he wrote is called Eat More, Weigh Less. Mm. And the kind of funny story behind that is the first time he wrote this book, he wrote it to open up your arteries and keep you from dying of heart disease. Mm. But the book was a flop. Nobody bought it. Mm. But his one of the side effects of opening up your arteries was the weight loss. Mm. So his publisher came back and said, Doc, people won't pay to save their lives, but they'll pay to lose weight.
Yeah.
Say, go back, rewrite this book. We're going to change the title from How to Save Your Life to Eat More, Weigh Less. Huh. And it became a bestseller for 3 or 4 years in a row. He made a fortune off it.
Wow.
And so,
if you get a chance, can you maybe address what causes the little LDL particles to increase? I mean, I don't eat a whole lot of red meat. I mean, I do eat some, but, you know, I eat more chicken and pork and fish.
But, you know, in some people,
in
some people, it's just genetics.
Yep.
We're just made, you know.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah. By the way, that article you ask about on the statins, testosterone, et cetera, is published in the World Journal of Diabetes. And the name of it is Statin, Testosterone, and Phosphodiesterase 5 Inhibitor Treatments and Age-Related Mortality in Diabetes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, I could probably find it on the PubMed.
I'm sure you can.
Okay, so it's just genetic then. My liver
most likely,
is
taking
these little things out.
That's right. And then also the lipoprotein particle little A, that is also a genetic trait and runs in families, very difficult to reduce. You know, things like niacin can help lower that LDL, and it might also help your HDL particles. I don't know if you can tolerate high doses of niacin. I do have some cardiology colleagues that have used, you know, 2,000 milligrams or higher. The flushing is what prevents my patients from using it, and then the liver enzymes will go up. But I do have cardiology colleagues that use niacin. And then, again, another thing that I've been hearing is about vitamin C and its impact on lowering lipoprotein particle A. So, you know, you can try these things, but, again, I do that in conjunction with what the cardiology is recommending. And then if the levels are coming down quickly, then I do send my patients back to cardiology and say, well, can you now lower the dose of the statins?
Okay. Well, thank you very much for all your information.
Okay. Take care,
sir. One last thing is, you know, if you get a chance, and not now, but, you know, I listened to Jerry Berg for years, and I was shocked when you said the other a couple of weeks ago that he had passed away.
Yeah.
So if you know, just let us know what happened there. I mean, was it, you know?
Well, yeah, and
a
Jerry.
Car accident?
Jerry actually came on the show and talked about it, so I know he doesn't mind it being shared.
Yeah.
Cool. He had gastrointestinal reflux for many years. And what he did is that triggered an esophageal cancer. And then by the time it was discovered, it had already spread to his liver and his bones and stuff. So we knew from the time of diagnosis that we were going to lose him. But he was determined to go as long as he could. A month or so ago?
Yes. It's pretty fresh.
Maybe
2 months max.
Oh, Jerry was early 80s.
Yeah. 83, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Yeah, he actually covered for Lynette once on the show, and he requested that we discuss this.
Yes.
He wanted people to know, and he wanted them to be active and alert and take steps before rather than later.
Yeah, Jerry wanted everybody to know that GE reflux, having acid coming up your esophagus, is not benign.
Yeah.
That it's not just uncomfortable. It can trigger cancer and kill you. And that's how he died. And so he wanted everybody else to know, my golly, you're getting reflux, get it fixed.
Yes.
Do not just pass it off as minor, because that's what caused his cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, we miss him.
We do miss him, yeah.
Oh, thank you for your call, Ray. Okay, we are going to take a little break right here, and we will be back taking your phone calls. The lines are open at 206-644-6006. Back with Jackie from Kent in just a moment. Stay right there.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know as love. You have worked.
And welcome back. The doctors are busy looking at things on the computer, getting things discussed here. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Okay, we have a couple more callers. Let's get to them. And here is that number if you'd like to get through with your question. We still have time. And the lines are open at 206-644-6006. Okay, headed to Kent. Jackie is on the line. Good morning, Jackie.
Hello, I am calling regarding anesthesia services.
All right.
I have we don't a couple do those, questions dear. About it. One
okay.
of them is, what is medical fentanyl used for? Because in my last surgery, I was put in a catatonic state because I was overdosed on fentanyl.
Fentanyl?
Huh. Yep.
Yeah.
That's
what
odd.
Do they use it for?
Maybe next week when Dan Nelson is here, he might know because he's an anesthesiologist.
That's true.
Oh,
Dan
okay.
got
yeah.
his first degree in anesthesia.
Yeah, that's right. He'll yeah. know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, fentanyl patches are used for pain relief, people with chronic pain, and you just put the patch on your thigh or your tummy and you absorb it over a 24-hour period. But I have not. I'm
but
not
we don't do anesthesia.
You know, I don't do anesthesia, so I really
oh,
don't
okay.
know why I would use that. For,
yeah, but call next week when Dr. Nelson is
yeah,
here.
Because Dan probably is right up on that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So he might be able to answer
to
my
elucidate.
Question.
It's, that's right.
I've been wanting to know this for a while. The other yeah. thing is, do the doctors, when they go into surgery, and I know you've been a doctor for a long time, when doctors go in, do they get a say in the anesthesiology that is used on the patient?
Yes, they do. Most of the time, they don't interfere. You know, the anesthesiologist is the expert in putting you to sleep. So the vast majority of the time, the doctor just goes in, you know, smiles at the anesthesiologist. You may say, can you carry this one a little light, or this one is going to be kind of long. Can you take them a little deeper? You know, but the conversations are usually pretty general. Now, there are certain cases, you know, where you don't want the person to go to sleep. And maybe you really would prefer that this patient, because you know their history, you just want them to have a regional anesthesia or a spinal block or something along those lines.
Actually, but, my second arthroscopic surgery on my knee, I'm a lot like Dr. Jerry. I am a day younger than he is. But
okay.
I do a lot of activities. And my second torn meniscus,
yeah.
my physician was David J. Belfi. And I just told him I didn't want anesthesiology. So he did a spinal block.
Uh-huh.
And I was awake the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I walked out of there with a crutch. But I told my husband, I can drive home. It was,
right.
it was that easy.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I remember back when I got umpteen years ago when I got all shot up, I had a total of 13 surgeries over a 2-year period putting things back together. And
you're ahead of me.
But I remember when they were working on the tendons in my right forearm and hand, they did it under a regional where they just gave me a local anesthesia into the brachial plexus in my armpit and made the whole arm numb. And so I was otherwise completely awake, and I just had a numb arm while they worked on it.
Did you watch it, Dr. Mixon? I bet you did.
I couldn't see it.
Oh, okay.
But at one point in the surgery, I think I was looking a little too relaxed, drowsy, because all of a sudden the surgeon said, "Oops."
Oh,
I looked over and I said, "Wait a minute, what was that oops?"
Oh.
And his answer was, "Don't worry about it, son. You got another one."
You know, I did watch my entire knee
Dr. Humor
surgery, and it was and the doctor talked to me the whole time, and he showed me what was going on, and he said, "Look, there's no arthritis in there," and I remember every single thing about it, and I would love to see more of that happening.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and talk to your doc. I mean, if the surgeon is the captain of the ship, okay? So when you're in the operating room, everybody is subservient to the surgeon. He can decide or she can decide what she does and does not want done in that doctor's operating room. Second in command is anesthesia. Okay, he's the other MD who is in charge of keeping you safe. So they have, you know, one does the job and the other is in charge of safety. But they can discuss and come to agreements between them on what they want done and how they want it done. And, you know, they're a team. They work together. So you make your wishes known to your surgeon. The surgeon will discuss it, hopefully, with the anesthesiologist, and they'll come to an agreement to keep you safe, comfortable, but let the doctor do his surgery.
I'll try to call you back next week and see if I can find out more about what the fentanyl is used for.
Sounds good to me. Okay,
thank you,
take
guys.
Care, my dear.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we've got some callers on the line. It has been a busy morning, so many different things talking about. And we have another topic we haven't discussed in a while, thyroid. And that's going to come up right after we take this break with Lisa. Kyle, we've got you on the line and still room for maybe a couple more callers at 206-644-6006. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Stay tuned.
Every star's a wishing star that shines for you.
And good morning. We're back with more Leading Edge Medicine. And boy, a lot of calls all of a sudden. Hello, the phone lines went off. So let's dive right in. We have Lisa on the line calling in from Marysville. Hi there, Lisa.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So this is about ivermectin and the safety of it or not, and okay. I've been hearing some controversies. So basically, it's to do, there's controversy on what it should or should not be used for, and then, of course, the FDA and the CDC says only used not for anything to do with COVID, but then there's a lot of people out there who believe it has very good, you know, helps you with getting along with COVID. And there's a place called the FLCCC Alliance, Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, that's done a lot of research, and I've read a lot through them. So my question, and I think it was a year or two ago, I think I heard you, Jerry, say, I think you said that you keep some ivermectin in your medicine cabinet just in case. Now, I might be wrong, but I think you said that a couple years ago. So I thought, well, you must think it's not actually toxic or harmful if you keep it. But then that was a couple years ago, I think. So my question is really about the safety of taking it for a person. And my reason for doing it in this case would be, is to do with COVID because I might be considered sort of high risk. maybe. But I'm taking other supplements that are just good things to keep my immune system up. Anyway, sorry, I'm just want to explain this. So, but my doctor right now, she knows I've been like really protective for the last 3 years, but I'm starting to get out now and going, you know what? I can't live like this forever. I have to live normal. So I'm trying to get out there now, and I'm going to have some known possible exposure coming up. Mm-hmm. So she gave me some dosages, and I mean, I didn't get them yet, but I could go to a compounding pharmacy that she already put the prescription in for me, but I haven't decided if I'm going to do it yet. And here's what the amount would be, and it would be for me and my husband since we're both going to be exposed, and it is completely based on weight. So that's why it, one is versus the other. If we did it as a preventative, for me, it would be 12 milligrams, two pills weekly for 4 to 5 weeks. So just two pills weekly, 4 to 5 weeks, 12 milligrams. My husband would be 20 milligrams. This is before the exposure that we know is coming up. Then for 3 to 4 weeks, I would take 27 milligrams and my husband 40, one pill daily. And then it was only if we actually came down with COVID, only then I would go to 40 milligrams, one a day for 5 days until symptoms are gone, up to 15 days, and my husband 60. And so my question is, does that sound like too high of a dosage to take for that long? Is it safe to do that?
I don't know. I really don't. Here's the thing with ivermectin. And it wasn't ivermectin that I kept in my cupboard. It was the hydroxychloroquine. that I put in
my... Okay, I mixed those two, I guess. Sorry.
Yeah. When COVID first hit the country, you know, we had no vaccines, we had nothing. We were hearing horror stories from the Royal Society in London claiming that, you know, this was a SARS variant, and everybody knew that SARS killed 70% of the people that got infected, and because this virus was somewhat similar, they were predicting 10 million deaths in America in the first 6 months. I mean, you know, that was pretty horrible predictions.
That's right.
Fortunately, they were way off base. It turned out to not be anywhere near that.
But we didn't know.
That's right. It was brand new. And so they, you know, in that setting, you know, all of the so-called experts, you know, went to Trump and said, we can't have 10 million dead people in American streets in the next 6 months. We've got to get a vaccine. We got to do it right now. And so they pulled out all the stops. We got a vaccine in 8 months. And the good news is we had a vaccine. The bad news is we didn't have 3 years to test it like we normally would have. And so we're just now 3 years later getting the studies telling us about the adverse effects related to the vaccine. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we were looking for what else might work.
Yeah.
And hydroxychloroquine was one possibility. Ivermectin was another. And the hydroxychloroquine actually is a very safe drug. It's used for rheumatoid arthritis. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people have taken it for years. Very, very low side effect profile.
And for malaria in countries where it's endemic, and for malaria prophylaxis if you're traveling to those countries.
And when I was a young soldier in Vietnam, I took hydroxychloroquine every day of my life. Okay, throughout my tours in Vietnam, because it was to protect me against malaria. So, you know, when people started getting all upset about writing hydroxychloroquine off label, we just kind of rolled our eyes and said, you people are crazy. This stuff is shown. It's, you know, every military in the world uses it for their troops in tropical zones. We've known about it for 50 years. What are you upset about? Well, it also turned out to be so-so against COVID. Not a great drug for COVID, but, you know, maybe helps some. Mm-hmm. But in the early days, I wanted it in my medicine chest.
Well, everybody was scared. Everybody wanted something.
That's right.
Well, my doctor, for me, actually said, I actually mentioned about hydroxychloroquine, and she said She didn't want me on that because of something to do with the heart. She said there can be heart rhythm issues or something.
There can be.
Yes, that is correct.
High doses with a small percentage of people, but it's tiny. It really is.
Okay.
Ivermectin
still safe? Do you that?
There
at
is,
this point,
well, there
she's
is,
only going to do it for that.
Yeah, and there is the other question. What about ivermectin? Though between the two, I'd say probably the hydroxychloroquine is safer. Ivermectin is kind of there is an enormous debate among people that want to look at it honestly. The studies done in the United States have all shown that ivermectin had no effect whatsoever on who got well and who didn't. So that's the papers published in the journals and the CDC say ivermectin is not effective. On the other hand, studies done in other countries like India, ivermectin was used widely in India and basically abolished the disease in whole areas of the country. Because India did not have a vaccine, they used what they had, and they had vast quantities of ivermectin around, and so they just started passing it out like candy. And they had the areas that depended on the vaccines had a lot of deaths. The areas that depended on the ivermectin didn't have many deaths. And so it would appear in a widespread clinical trial in a second world country, ivermectin seemed to work pretty well. But when we try it on our patients here in the hospitalized people, we don't get any discernible impact. What's the truth? What's going on? I don't know. Mm. Yeah.
But it's not necessarily. Oh, so it might not be effective is actually one thing. But as far as the safety, I'm actually more concerned about.
I understand. And with animals, we have used massive doses for a long time, and our pets are not toppling over dead, and they're not having seizures. But I don't know of any long-term studies on ivermectin in human beings.
So if I'm guessing correctly, you're more worried about using something for prophylaxis right now.
Well, and actually, I already kind of decided that I feel like I don't really want to use it for the preventative part as much as just if I actually get it. Though my doctor prescribed it that way because of some stuff coming up in my life that I knew I'd be in more high exposure and I'm not going to be so secluded anymore. So she said, why don't we do this as a preventative thing? And that would be for several weeks before, during exposure. And then if I got it, COVID itself, then make the dosage, the higher dosage. But I kind of decided I don't really want to do that because then I'm saying to myself, every day the rest of my life, if I'm going to be in any high exposure, I have to do this preventative. And I don't want to do that. So at this point, I'm just thinking, if I only say, just stick with my, you know, my zinc and vitamin D and other good supplements that I'm taking to help me stay well, but then only if I get COVID, just if I actually test positive, then immediately have the ivermectin on hand, in my case 40 milligrams,
but
and in my husband
not,
60, would that be safe enough to do for just only if you get COVID to use
why
ivermectin?
Why not the Paxlovid?
Yeah. If you get COVID, take the antiviral.
Yeah, but I guess I've heard a lot of negative about Paxlovid too. And also that it does like that rebound thing or something. It doesn't really work.
Yes.
It'll work though. It's an antiviral. Yeah.
It's an antiviral and it has been approved.
Yeah.
And if you use it in the first couple of days,
right,
and you're in that first 24, 48 hour period, it knocks out the symptoms very quickly. Now, the fact is, though, a small percentage of people, they doesn't seem to totally wipe out the virus.
Yeah.
And then the virus regrows, and they come down with it a second time. But that's not
right.
A second exposure. That's just that they didn't take it long enough and high enough dose to totally wipe out the virus. There still was virus in their bloodstream. They stopped taking the med. The virus resurged again.
Yeah, I mean, and other than that, Jerry, I haven't heard of any other complications from that drug.
Just cost.
Well, it's covered by insurance, right? Yeah. Where with the ivermectin, there's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts here.
Yeah.
Well, I know. At this point, I guess I'm just more of a person. I really more just at this point want to know if you think the ivermectin is still safe. And also, when you said something about animals, pardon me?
I said, I think.
You
and that's
think
because
so?
I think so, because we've used ivermectin since, God, I don't know, the 1930s or 40s or something.
It's been around.
For, you know.
For humans.
I understand.
Not
but
just for.
Yes, I do understand that. But we've used it for humans. We've used it topically for lice. And we've used it in enormous, the veterinarians have used it since the 1950s in vast amounts on animals. So we've got a lot of animal studies. We've got some human data now, but not high dose long term. That's our problem. We don't have big studies.
And that's why I think I don't want to do that one. I feel like I'm just going to nix that part of what my doctor said I could do. I mean, I think I just rather say only if I get it and just keep. But as far as the amounts that I even said, like when I look this up online, they tell you can get ivermectin in 3, 6, or 12 milligram doses, and most of them are 3. So then I'm going, well, gee, based on the weight, it's recommended I take 40 milligrams. My husband's 60. And if you actually get COVID, if before that it was the lower dosage, but it was still for a long time. And that's why when I looked it up, I thought it seemed like it might be unsafe. But and then
well,
I also looked something up.
There's a long side effect list with ivermectin.
And it has interactions with very common drugs and vitamins.
Wow.
Well, and I actually knew that about, like, quercetin. You're not supposed to take it at the same time. You're supposed to, what do you call it?
Well, this lists aspirin, Benadryl, Claritin, CoQ10, Eliquis, fish oil, Lipitor, Metoprolol, NAC. There's a whole host. Vitamin B, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin K2, zinc.
Wow. I think I'd rather have the COVID that is
yes,
the cold.
Yes, all have interactions with ivermectin.
Wow. 92 drugs known to interact with ivermectin.
Mm. Would you mind, can I ask you a little bit more about, I know you're going to a break.
Yeah, I've got about 4 more calls, too. Okay. And we only have a few minutes left.
Well, I'll tell you what, hang on after the break. We'll give you a few more seconds, but then we've got to move on, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, hang on, Lisa. We'll be right back. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and Leading Edge Medicine continues in just a moment.
The night was clear, and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I
and we're back. Oh, boy, with just a few minutes left of the show, and we have Lisa on the line.
Lisa, what was it you were trying to finish up with?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I was just, so when you were reading me that interaction
long list, yeah.
Where do I find that from?
Drugs.com.
Yeah, drugs.com. Just put in ivermectin and interactions.
Okay, drugs.com, and then just ivermectin, and then interactions. Okay, because I definitely want to look at that. And then is there a difference between ivermectin for humans versus ivermectin for animals? Because that's another thing I'm confused.
No,
it's the same drug.
It's the same drug.
It's not like you buy one that's for humans or you buy one that's for animals.
No, that's one of those silly Hollywood things. Oh, it's an animal. No, it's not. It's a drug.
It's the same
it doesn't
drug.
Matter.
So,
yeah, it doesn't matter who we give it to.
And so the ones that you were talking about, at least in India, that it showed good promise there, that was the same one for humans.
Same drug. Yep.
Okay. And then the place I mentioned, the Frontline Care. Have you heard of that place, the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance? And what?
I've heard of it. I am not a member. I haven't investigated it deeply. It's just one of those things that has kind of passed by my notice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just they've done so much studies, and they are just so believing that this is really helpful, ivermectin, wow. and that it's very yeah. safe. So,
and it may be. Like I said, I'm ambivalent, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's COVID is not in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's kind of gone now.
I treat the normal but undesired changes of aging, and COVID's not one of them.
No.
And so when COVID was a big deal, I had to pay some attention to it because mm-hmm. we had a lot of calls about it, and my patients mm-hmm. were worried and stuff. But now that COVID is basically a thing of the past, mm-hmm. you know, for
and very mild for yeah. people that are getting it now, like
well,
a cold,
unless you have severe immunosuppression
things.
Of
yeah.
some reason.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Which is the other question, of course. You know, why are you so worried about it when most of us are pretty much immune to everything but a runny nose.
Yeah. Hey,
and
Lisa, we do have to go.
It's just that I just mostly wanted to make sure you didn't think it was for sure unsafe, and it sounds like you're saying you don't think it's really unsafe.
I don't think it's especially unsafe, but you do want to take a look at the list of things that interfere
yeah.
or that it connects
okay.
to, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, my dear.
Thank you, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
All right. We are going to quickly go to Kyle from Tacoma. Thank you for waiting, Kyle.
Hello, Kyle.
Oh, oops. We just lost Kyle. Let's head to Rob, who had a question in Seattle.
Hello, Rob.
Good morning. So I'm considering going on hormone replacement therapy.
Uh-huh.
And I was speaking with one of the people that I see at a wellness clinic. She's talking about putting in a pellet into my rump. Six months slow release.
Yep.
And then I know that there's self-injectable testosterone. I can't uh-huh. say which one that is right now because I forget. And then there's the patch. At your clinic, do you have different options there, or yeah. would you choose specific one?
We normally prefer the transdermal creams because it gives us almost infinite ability to adjust the dose. I can get your blood levels anywhere I want them to be at any given time of the day.
Is that a self-application on a daily basis?
Yep. I put it on every morning, wash it off every night.
It follows more.
I'm sorry, what?
Where do you apply it at?
Well, it depends.
On your body?
I use my genitals and my axilla. So,
what's your axilla?
I'm sorry, the armpits.
So our doctors
will
go over with you where they suggest. And the reason is absorption. And, you know, the daily application follows normal physiology mm-hmm. where you peak in the yeah. morning and then you fall off. With the pellets, uh-huh. That's a difficult thing to control because you're a steady state all the time. And with the pellets, if they get it right, they get it right and it's convenient. They get it wrong. Now you're stuck for 6 months. You cannot do anything with that dose. You got to live with the side effects. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so as a first line, I would say always try the cream first, at least to figure out what is your right dose. And then maybe later yeah. on, if you want to. In fact, yeah. we might do the same in our clinics, too. We have been discussing it. But the vast majority of our patients like to use the creams because now it allows them control. It allows them flexibility. We know what is best, better absorbed for them, and we can measure.
I
understand, and I have talked to you many times and also about the option of becoming a patient.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you guys are way over in Kirkland, and I'm up here in the North End, and a recent person I saw was on out in Anacortes, and she's been doing this for quite some time. She's a nurse practitioner in a wellness clinic.
Is she only doing the testosterone is my question, because you said hormone replacement therapy.
She is doing other treatments.
Okay, because she needs to be because if you're going to replace your hormones, the hormones that need to be measured and replaced as required are your thyroid, pregnenolone, testosterone, progesterone, estradiol.
I wished I had the printout. I just had a very extensive complete CBC done. With everything, I mean, it's two pages of all of my vitals and everything under the sun.
Okay.
she wanted me to run it by my urologist, who I'm currently under his care when I need to be. And she wanted to have a letter of approval, so I ran it by my urologist. He said that my testosterone level was normal, which it is. There's a scale. Mine happens to be 555, and that's measured, I guess, in whatever.
Mm-hmm. Deciliters per deciliter
or whatever, and so I'm right in the middle, and mm-hmm. my free testosterone, if I recall, was like 26 point something or whatever, mm-hmm. and that also happens to be in the middle range. Mm-hmm. So based on him, and I kind of suspected that he may not approve because he's a medical doctor and not really into the preventative medicine type.
Wait a minute.
Where I've always...
Samara and I are both medical doctors. My MD says...
But you're practicing a whole different level. Listen, we've talked many times, and I've been listening to you for well into 15 years.
Okay.
So I know where you come from, and I'm 100% almost everything that you talk about. So.
All right. Well... You know, there's a lot of ways to give testosterone, and I just want to make sure that they're not just giving you testosterone, that they're monitoring all of the other hormones that need to be put where they ought to be.
Right. I know you're going to break. If I was able
Yeah, we'll be done with the show in 40 seconds.
We finished the show in 40 seconds.
So we got to run, Kyle. You know what? Call us back next week, and maybe we can talk more about that.
Call us back early in the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk. We would love to continue this conversation.
Yes.
So call back.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. And we had a few calls we couldn't get to today. Please call us back early in the show next week.
Early in the show, we were shorter calls.
That's right. We need you at 10 a.m. to call us next Saturday. Thank you. If you'd like to get in touch with us, of course, 1-866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, lmclinic.com. That is the number to call to sign up for that gallery test we're doing June 24th in our Kirkland Longevity Clinic. So find out more, give us a call. Have a great rest of your weekend.